Hey everybody, welcome to The Geek Generation. I'm your host, Rob Logan, joined in the studio today by Anna.
Hello.
Hello, and Paulo.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, you.
Hey, you guys. Hey, you guys.
Hey, you guys.
We're gonna start... Anna's just already annoyed with us. Already, just right away.
She's so over it.
Yeah.
That was the most predictable bit ever.
Yeah, I know, right? So reviews, we're going to kick off the show with this week. Anna, you watched a TV show that I also watched, so we can talk about it.
Yeah. So the new Muppet Show premiered, what was that, Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday. What'd you think?
I don't know.
I'm a little iffy on it.
Yeah.
I was underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Hopeful.
Hopeful.
But underwhelmed.
Always remember, pilot is a pilot.
Right.
They're setting the stage.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was a little... I'm not sure of the tone. I hope that they catch like a groove because the tone was a little odd. It was more grown up than I thought it would be.
Oh, I knew that was happening.
Well, I...
They announced that like right away. This is like an adult's Muppet. Not like... Mm-hmm. We're the late night, not that,
yeah.
but definitely more adult oriented Muppet humor.
Yeah.
It's like Muppets.
Which I just don't know if that fits Kermit though. Like he was very out of character to me.
Yeah.
Kermit seemed real out of character.
Are you saying he was like a frog out of water?
Yeah.
And Anna's leaving. Oh wow, and she's doing Foley work. That's impressive.
No, I mean, I definitely laughed. I got a bunch of good chuckles out of it,
mm-hmm.
but I'm like mildly concerned. It just, he was so down and like, you know, he's got a new girlfriend and it's just weird. It was weird. It was very strange for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was not very Muppet-like. Some of the humor definitely was. Animal was funny.
Yep.
The little shrimp, what's his name?
Pepe.
Yeah, Pepe was great.
Yeah.
So I'll give it, I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah.
But I'm going to approach with caution.
I didn't realize from the stuff they had originally released, like, I thought it was going to be behind the stage of a new Muppet show.
Of a new Muppet show. That's what I thought.
I didn't realize
too.
It was a late night Piggy starring show. Talk show.
Yeah.
I don't think I like that
part. No, because the Muppet show was such a grand, big thing.
Right.
And
right.
like a little late night talk show is such a small thing.
And I used to love the segments that we'd see from the Muppet show, whether they be just opportunities for guest cameos or whether they be things that you knew were going to just go downhill so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the more like talent oriented type show.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if they thought that was going to be just more of the same or not.
Yeah. But it's been so long. I mean,
right.
I know they did Muppets Tonight and it failed miserably. I don't know why. I watched it and I loved it.
I enjoyed it too.
But I mean, they might have just thought that format wasn't going to work, but I don't know. And I got a coworker of mine expressed a lot of concern over the shaky cam. He's like, why shaky cam?
I wasn't
like,
a huge
what
fan
the
of
hell?
That either. Yeah.
Which who likes it? Does
right.
anybody like it? Have you ever met somebody that likes
there
it?
There are proper uses for it, but it's not generally for this. I know they're trying to do it for like a more documentary looking feel,
right.
which I don't know if it's necessary. Really?
No. And sometimes, like you said with the pilot too, they might back down on that style.
Mm-hmm.
They might take that down a couple notches
right,
as they go.
Right.
I think the Office was like that. I think it started off much more live shaky cam style
mm-hmm.
and then it got more studio feel because they realized it's distracting.
Right.
Because
right.
it is distracting.
The weirdest part for me or the most off-putting was just seeing all of Fozzie.
Oh,
yeah.
It's weird when you can see
the whole Muppet.
The whole
yeah.
Muppet.
Yeah.
Or like when she threw Skeeter out of the cart.
Yeah, that was
same
funny.
Thing. Yeah, that was funny. Yeah. I did like her being on it. That was good.
Yeah.
Tom Bergeron was really funny.
He was very funny.
That was good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep giving it a try, but I wasn't like blown away. I wasn't like, oh my God, I can't wait till next week.
Right, right. I was kind of in the same
yeah.
camp. It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like... Yay, the Muppets are back.
Right, right. And I think it's still probably better than 90% of the stuff on television. So I should probably watch it just to keep the ratings up. Like, people are watching it. Keep it on television,
right,
please.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I laughed. I guess that's all that really matters. It
right.
made me laugh.
Paul, you watched it too, right?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I mean, like, one of the things I liked about it was that, you know, it's obviously bringing something from your childhood and bringing it up to date and in a way that you can understand it and relate to it a little bit better. But
mm-hmm.
along those same lines, it's like The Office was relatable because one, it was in a very like typical office setting.
Sure.
And so that was definitely like you understood those archetypes and the characters.
Right.
But like in the Muppets, it's like, oh, it's the entertainment industry. It's like, if I was in the entertainment industry, like it'd be a little bit more relatable with, you know, the fact that they're doing it behind the scenes of a TV show. Like if I didn't like have friends who work in Hollywood and know about that process, like the whole table read scene was kind of just like, okay. Like,
yeah,
you know, I guess you can suss out some jokes there. And but, you know, like I was hoping it was going to be something more along the lines of Fozzie's storyline, like out in the world, not kind of like contained in the studio.
Right.
Like, I actually kind of like that. The Fozzie storyline where he's meeting the parents and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, you know, that's kind of what you wanted to see.
It was different to do that, but at the same time, it's always disturbing to me when they're suggesting like human Muppet relations. Like I can suspend my disbelief only so far.
Right.
When we're talking about them like having children and stuff, I'm like, and I noticed too, like right away, that they recast between the time that we saw that original stuff. Like Ricky Lindholm was not Fozzie's girlfriend in the original footage that they released when they were showing the previews. So they must have recast and reshot a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. But in that scene, though, I did like the father. I don't know his name.
He was very funny.
Yeah, that guy, he was in like Breaking Bad and stuff too.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Like, yeah, I like that guy. Like, he's a character actor. I liked his role. But yeah, I mean, I definitely enjoyed it. Like, I watched it and, you know, I definitely was like, oh, I got my dose of Muppets, you know, because it's like, you know, I haven't seen them for a long time.
Right, right.
Except for the movies. And so I'm eager to see what the show does. I just hope that it's not too like Hollywood centric so that you're not like, I mean, by making a show like that, like you're kind of excluding a big part of,
I agree,
you know, the country.
Like, yeah.
I mean, that's the success of The Office is that it's relatable.
Right.
And it's in that documentary form.
Right.
Like if you don't make it relatable, then what are you doing?
Yeah. Like they could have, you were talking about using kind of a nostalgia to kind of set the stage and that's our point of reference.
Right.
So if they were doing more of the same and it was the behind the scenes of the Muppet Show, but we're seeing it from this other perspective, like before we saw the Muppet Show, we saw it as it was presented. We saw the backstage, but it was all like a part of the show. Mm-hmm. But now it's like we're almost spying on the backstage instead, so we're supposed to see some more real edgy elements in backstage, so that whole thing could be common ground, but we're just seeing it from this mockumentary kind of perspective now.
I think with the like guest stars too, what bothered me a little bit, like on the old Muppet Show, and it's the same with Sesame Street, is it's very improvised.
Mm-hmm.
So on like the old Muppet Show, when a Muppet was talking to a human star, it was actually pretty real. Like that star was actually talking to that Muppet and they were kind of interacting in the way that like Jay Leno and his guest interacts, and in that it's not really scripted.
Sure.
And now it's so scripted that like you lose that, even that excitement of having a guest star on, because you're losing some of that improv. So like having her on was cool, but you didn't feel like she was getting Muppetized. Like you didn't feel like she was getting the Muppet treatment as like a Muppet guest star.
Right.
You know what I mean?
She could have just as easily been a Muppet.
Right. She was just so scripted. And like part of the coolest thing about the Muppets is like the human Muppet interactions.
Yeah, the way
and
people react to them and the regard they hold for them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch like the old Muppet Show with like them and like Lena Horne, or like when Animal had a drum battle with Buddy Rich.
Yeah,
like that's all almost live. Like it feels like they're actually like the Muppets are real and that those people are real.
And it felt more real than a documentary, which is supposed to be the realest of.
Yeah. But like this was so clearly like scripted.
Yeah.
So it just kind of lost a little of that excitement. Like, and I know they're going to bring other stars in, but it's not going to be as funny like to see, oh, what is Bruce Willis going to do when he meets Kermit?
Right.
You know what I mean? Cause it's already pre-done.
I'd actually wish that the Imagine Dragons bit went a little longer, because that's one of the things that I think was most in the vein of what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm sure that the guy that was puppeteering Animal was just like doing whatever the fuck he wanted. Yeah, and that's when it's cool. And like and that's why even as an adult, I still like to watch Sesame Street, because when they have guest stars on, it's so funny, because a lot of times the Muppets will like knock them off their feet and they won't really know what to say. You know, I mean, they did like a bit with Oscar the Grouch and Mike Rowe, and it was, I mean, it's for 5-year-olds and I was rolling around on the floor laughing, you know, and that's kind of what I meant. I guess, because it was a little, it was just too scripted.
In that vein too, I don't know if people have seen the, if you haven't seen these clips online of, not on Sesame Street, because this was on Martha Stewart's show, I believe, when Cookie Monster was a guest on her show.
Oh, nice.
If, have you not seen these?
No.
It's almost uncomfortable at times.
Oh, geez.
Because he is just destroying, he's eating everything. It's so friggin' funny. Like, whoever was controlling Cookie Monster, it was almost like he was sent to fuck with Martha Stewart.
Nice.
It's so great. Nice. Absolutely watch those. I'll see if I can find them and post them in the show notes, because it's unbelievably funny.
Yeah, yeah, I think I missed that little bit of a surprise element to it. It's a little, it's too scripted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, it needs to be like a live show.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. The next one, Paulo, you have a different TV show for us.
Yes, I'm talking about Power Season 2. Now, this is not Powers, as we discussed earlier.
Yes,
not the show
yes.
Powers that we talked about before, but it's just Power, Power, singular.
Power.
It's a show on Stars. They just finished their second season about a month ago. It's one of the summer shows. And it's, I mean, the best way I can describe it is kind of like Sopranos with black people.
Okay.
I mean, that's the best way to describe it. And it's a little bit more R-rated than the Sopranos, okay, which is hard to do, but they do some stuff in the show. Like, for people who aren't familiar, the show is about a drug dealer in New York City called Ghost, who he's, for all intents and purposes, he's the, like, he's a family man. He runs businesses, but he's also the most powerful drug dealer in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Season one was kind of about introducing the character of Ghost and then showing the cracks in his foundation. You know that he's super powerful and that he's running everything, but you start to see the cracks form. And season two is kind of about his whole empire crumbling to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's less about him being more powerful and him being, and more so about him being like a vulnerable person, which
okay,
in season one you didn't get. He was like the Teflon Don, so to speak. Like, he was untouchable.
Gotcha.
Season two, he's more vulnerable, but he's also got more relationships and more to lose.
I imagine that makes for way more interesting stories.
Yeah, it's way better. But I mean, it kind of suffers in the way that he always comes out on top somehow.
Okay.
Like, he's always got leverage on someone.
Yeah, so does Doctor Who.
Right, and he's like always a step ahead, kind of. So it's kind of like, yeah, he's got that advantage on most of the people in the show. But yeah, season two is definitely a lot better than season one. I think you saw a lot more of the character development in the way that you see how the problems influence the character,
mm-hmm,
and how the people around him are influenced by his new self.
Okay.
Because he's not the all-powerful Teflon Don anymore, and he's going through a lot and he's struggling. Like, he's like the theme of the whole of season two is kind of like this whole struggle mentality, like getting to the next day and mm-hmm, getting through it. For people who are into this sort of thing, there's a lot of nudity in this show.
All so, right.
I mean, if you want to see a lot of free range titty, there's a whole bunch of it.
I know one Geek Generation co-host who's not here at the moment that loves that. So.
And there's a lot of it in the show. So, I mean, it can make a room uncomfortable at times. But
don't watch this with your mother.
Yeah,
no.
Definitely don't watch it with your family. Unless it's your wife and, you know.
You're just trying to get things going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the story is definitely, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's produced by 50 Cent, so you kind of feel like what is this guy?
I would have the same response.
What does this guy know about TV?
Right, right.
But I mean, the people in charge of the show are, I don't know where they come from pedigree-wise, like what they've done in the past, but
okay,
they're doing a good job with the show. If you like that sort of crime drama sort of thing, this is definitely your show. And I would definitely check it out. Like I said, it's on Stars, so I'm not sure how widely available that is, like, streaming-wise.
Okay.
But, you can definitely probably find it on the internet somewhere, or I don't know. I don't know if it's going to go to Netflix or Amazon Prime at any point, but I would check it out. Like I said, season one is a little less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Season two, because of the vulnerabilities and the problems, is a definitely a better show.
Cool. Well, regardless if it's streaming, I'm sure it's available on DVD or Blu-ray, and people could probably get that at thegeekgeneration.com/Amazon.
That's a place to go. You should definitely go there. Don't stream it.
Don't stream it.
Unless you're going to stream it through Amazon Prime, which you can get through thegeekgeneration.com/Prime and get 30 days for free.
You could do that, too.
That's an excellent idea.
I know. Look at all the options we provide people. I mean, we're here for you.
Plugs!
Plugs! I am reviewing a movie that I caught a preview screening of a few weeks ago. It's, out and about by now, but I saw it way ahead of time. A movie called The Intern. I don't know if you guys have seen previews of it.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway. Yeah. It looked pretty interesting from the get-go, I thought. The premise is that Hathaway plays Jules Austin, a successful woman who runs a self-made startup online fashion site that's on the cutting edge. De Niro plays Ben Whitaker, a 70-year-old widower who finds retirement boring, so he applies to a senior internship program at Austin's company where his experience can be fully utilized. So The Intern, suggesting that you were going to have a younger, like, fresh out of college person, but with a senior intern program. That's De Niro's role coming into the company and working for Anne Hathaway, basically for free. And I can see why some people might think this is not going to be that great right away. And it might just be not only the premise is a little strange, but I assume that they're going to, in their brain, attach it to the internship, which was that Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, the Google movie, I believe it was.
The internet Google as like the second phase of
life. Right,
right. Yeah.
Which was kind of a similar idea, like of older interns, but not as old. And I didn't realize even that this, because from the previews, it looks like it might even be a drama, but it's definitely listed as a comedy. And it was laugh out loud funny at a lot of points. Wasn't expecting it to be nearly as funny. De Niro has just come into his own as like a comedic presence. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the Fockers movies. I know that was kind of his big turn into comedy. Mm-hmm. And he's done a lot of different things since that. He's clearly far from the De Niro that we knew back in the day, but I'd like to think an evolved De Niro, because he's so well-rounded in different areas now, and his comedy chops are just phenomenal in this movie. The supporting cast also great comedy backgrounds. Adam Devine, really funny in this. Zach Perlman is hysterical in this. Renee Russo's in it. She's always great. They even have Nat Wolff, who was just in Paper Towns that we talked about a little while ago. And his role is actually very small in this movie. I was kind of surprised. It was like he just did a lead role in another movie. I'm wondering if this was filmed like way before that. So who knows? I figure his quote has gone up quite a bit since then. But overall, just really, really enjoyed it. It's one of those movies that is somewhat kind of life inspirational. Like you feel better coming out of it, and it's worth watching just because of how friggin' funny it is.
Yeah, it looked super wholesome. Like,
yeah.
When I saw the preview.
Yeah.
Like, definitely like a life affirming sort of thing, like you can go back again sort of thing.
Yeah. And I'm happy to see just like comedy that's not purely absurd or purely like slapsticky gross out American Pie. Like we've had that for so long and people are still doing it. This is just a comedy that anybody can watch, and it's not like it's cookie cutter super family friendly clean jokes either. It's just good comedy.
That's awesome.
It just works. So I recommend it really for anybody. Really liked it. Before we move on, just a quick reminder that you can help support the show by not only going to all those wonderful Amazon links we provided earlier, but you can also go to thegeekgeneration.com/support. When you do, that will take you to our Patreon page where you can sign up to become a patron of The Geek Generation. All you have to do is sign up, choose your contribution amount, and it will be donated automatically each month. You can cancel that donation at any time. We've added a benefit to being a contributor, which is for those who donate $1 or more, you'll get early access to the show. So as soon as I finish editing it on whatever day that I do finish editing it, that's one of the that's a tongue twister of all the times. Whenever I'm done editing it, you will get it at the Patreon backers area. Again, that's thegeekgeneration.com/support. If you'd like to help us out, we appreciate every little bit that you do. Jumping into the news this week, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. First of all, Rachel McAdams has confirmed that she will star in Marvel's Doctor Strange alongside Benedict Cumberbatch. No specific role. Oh, there it is. That's just the instinctive response on this show now. Benedict Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch. No specific role for McAdams has yet been confirmed for the November 4th, 2016 release. I'm excited just because I love Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, she's my husband's favorite.
Really?
Oh, he loves her.
I don't
blame him.
He loves
her so very much.
She is wonderful.
He's like, she's like his, you know, okay, if she wants to have sex with you, fine.
Sure.
You know, everybody's got one of those.
Oh,
it's like,
pass.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Go right ahead.
Actress Olivia Cooke has been cast in the role of Artemis in Steven Spielberg's film adaptation of Ready Player One. Artemis is an avatar of the coincidentally named Samantha Cooke in the globally networked virtual utopia called Oasis. Olivia Cooke has been seen in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, The Signal, and is also well known for her leading role as Emma Ducote on A&E's Bates Motel. I've seen a little bit of Bates Motel, and I did see Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. She was wonderful in the movie. And I didn't even realize it was the same actress in Bates Motel, but she's really good. So I'm excited to see her getting a little more attention here. I know she's on a short list of actors for, I think, episode 8 for being like the lead in Star Wars episode 8. Mm. So she's definitely like a rising star right now. And I imagine being in a Steven Spielberg movie is going to do her plenty of good.
Mm. Yeah. And she's definitely earning her nerd cred as playing a starring role in Ready Player One.
So absolutely, yeah.
People will know who she is by the time she's going into that.
I haven't read Ready Player One yet.
I just know that it is something in the nerd verse.
Yeah, like that, I've heard the premise and I like it. Uh-huh. I just, you know,
yeah, reading.
Yeah, I'd rather watch the movie. And I know Will Wheaton reads the audiobook.
Right.
So I could even go that, but now that I know a movie's coming, it's not going to happen. I'll just wait for the movie. Deadline is reporting that Legendary's upcoming Kong Skull Island has moved from Universal to Warner Brothers. According to the outlet, the move happened because Legendary is interested in developing a new King Kong vs. Godzilla movie and are making efforts to keep the beasts under the same distributor to make that task easier. Skull Island remains on track for a March 10th, 2017 release with a sequel to Gareth Edwards' Godzilla planned for June 8th, 2018. After that, the eighth wonder of the world will take on the King of Monsters in a currently untitled King Kong vs. Godzilla feature.
Mm.
How do we feel about King Kong vs. Godzilla?
Fuck yeah!
I don't know.
I'm psyched about it because, especially with the news that Pacific Rim 2 was sort of, I don't know what the rumors are, if they were rumors or if they're actually happening.
From what I've heard, it's on hold indefinitely.
Yeah, it was tabled, right? Like,
yeah.
But I mean, I think Guillermo del Toro said that he's submitting a script. They're going forward as planned. But the rumor is that the studio said that they're not interested in making it because it didn't do well domestically.
Right,
even
right.
Though it killed it internationally. So, like, it's exciting to me to hear, like, a big monster movie fight coming up.
I've also heard some chatter a little bit about this maybe then becoming, like, if Pacific Rim 2 is out, they might still think about doing something like a King Kong versus Godzilla versus Pacific Rim.
Robots versus monkeys versus...
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
What's strange about it is back, I've watched all the old Godzilla movies, like all the old black and white Japanese ones and stuff, and he used to be a lot smaller. So, like, Godzilla versus King Kong, like, wasn't that much of a stretch, but, like, how big is this gorilla going to be? Because Godzilla is flipping huge. Like, he didn't used to be that big, you know?
Like, his thigh is a skyscraper now?
Yeah, like, yeah. He's so much bigger, so it's sort of like there's no contest. Like, Godzilla would just rip King Kong into pieces.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting what they're going to make his, you know, abilities or his size in this Skull Island movie, because it's going to have to translate to Godzilla, who's already been a movie. Like, that character's already established at that size and at those capabilities.
True.
So now it's like, how are they going to make that? I mean, he's going to have to be a big fucking monkey.
And it's weird, too, because, like, what are they going to do as far as a villain versus hero dynamic? Because I don't think it works just like in a regular wrestling match. Like, if you throw two baby faces or two heels in a match, it's not as exciting because you don't know who to root for.
Right.
And in this, they've kind of established, because this is going to be in the same world, I imagine, as, because it's Legendary and everything, as the previous or the recent Godzilla movie. And Godzilla has been, yes, a force of nature, but definitely shown in a heroic light.
Right.
And if King Kong is coming in as a smaller creature, King Kong's going to feel like the underdog. And we're going to want to root for Godzilla, though.
You know what it might be? It might be like Batman v Superman, and it's going to be like they're pitted with each other against another.
So it might start off one against the other, and then they end up
Yeah, like they have to make these two get along kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, but they don't opt for obvious reasons, and then they end up having to fight this third thing.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, yeah, maybe it's going to be like Batman v Superman, where King Kong builds a suit of armor to fight Godzilla because he knows Godzilla is far superior.
Right.
We're going to put King Kong in Hulkbuster armor, and then...
That would be
We're making the best movie ever.
Here's the other weird complication with all this. Recently, we talked about that Rampage movie.
Right. And that kind of sounds like you're going there, right? Like,
right.
With like a monkey and a giant lizard teaming up. Maybe they're going to fight The Rock.
In which case, The Rock wins. let's not get that wrong.
That might be like, you know, those movies where you get... You know, like Deep Impact versus Armageddon. So like Rampage will be like the not so good version of that same concept. Like they'll just make them both like the two Snow White movies. We'll just make them both. Why not?
Can you imagine The Rock calling Godzilla a sumbitch?
Sure can.
Come down here, you big sumbitch.
I'll buy a ticket to
and
that.
And based on a past smash up, I can even picture The Rock riding on Godzilla into the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that came from a certain...
I think we need to copyright that idea. Like,
take my
right
money.
Fucking now.
Yeah, I think someone already wrote that's in this room.
Yeah.
And he's being ripped off like crazy.
What do you know? I'm an attorney. I could sue them.
Yes!
It's like this imaginary whirlpool that we're just going down.
The first episode of the eagerly anticipated revival of The X-Files will make its U.S. premiere at New York Comic-Con on Saturday, October 10th. The premiere will be shown on the main stage of the Javits Center, followed by a Q&A moderated by Kumail Nanjiani with series creator Chris Carter and star David Duchovny.
Dude, Kumail's doing big things. Like
I'm so happy for Kumail.
Went from being like a fan to going straight into being in the show and now moderating the panel. That's incredible. That's that's like a dream. Like if like your dream, like if literally it's like if you became Batman, like real Batman,
like not playing Batman,
or if like you were like a fan of Batman. Batman, like if you were a fan of Batman and then Batman was like, Rob, I need you to be my Robin. Robin.
Just add I-N.
Right. I think this is comparable to if I even got the opportunity to voice Batman in anything.
Right.
Yeah.
You become involved. You become like your heroes become your peers kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. So we're focused on Kumail, even though the X-Files premiere is coming up pretty soon in the U.S., which is awesome. And that's a long way to show it before the January premiere of the new series.
It's so limited, though. Think about how many people fit in there.
True.
Nobody.
True.
Which is why we can never get into the Walking Dead panel.
Also
ever,
true.
Ever.
But they do empty it out in between, unlike San Diego.
Yeah.
So you have to get wristbands, which is also hard to do. That's like
which
a whole...
we learned the hard way. Oh, the center opens at 9, except you can get wristbands at 6.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hang on a second. I'm confused.
It was really weird. Yeah, we got into one panel last year. We're hoping for more, I assume, this time.
It's terrible.
We'll see what happens. Variety is reporting that a Mary Poppins sequel is in the works at Walt Disney Pictures. According to the trade, the aim is to tell a story set 20 years after the original 1964 musical. Since the original film was set in the year 1910, the sequel will presumably take place in the 1930s. The goal, it's being said, is for the new film to borrow story elements from the 8 Mary Poppins books, including the first literary sequel, Mary Poppins Comes Back.
Don't care.
I like the effort that they put into naming that sequel. Mary Poppins Comes Back. Like, that is the least, that's minimal effort.
Right. Mary Poppins, still alive. I'm wondering if there's a huge clamoring for movies set in the 1930s.
Right? Yeah.
I did not know that was a thing.
I didn't know there was any demand for that whatsoever.
I didn't know there was a demand for Mary Poppins.
No.
I didn't know there were more Mary Poppins books.
I'm a huge Disney fan. I love Disney. I'm a big baby when it comes to Disney, but Mary Poppins was like, meh.
Yeah.
Nah. I mean, couple catchy songs, I suppose, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they made that one movie with Tom Hanks that was about the
Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah, Saving Mr. Banks.
That was really good.
And that was a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know if they got from that that people want more Mary Poppins because, I mean, that wasn't really, it was about the making of it.
Not right.
Really the, yeah, I don't know where this is coming from at all.
No, me neither. Wait and see, as usual. Sony's Project Morpheus has changed its name to PlayStation VR, because let's make everything boring sounding. The announcement was made at the company's Tokyo Game Show press conference. The hardware itself will continue to be refined in the coming months, and Sony is working closely with third parties and in-house studios to ensure there are games available when it launches. There's still no official release date, but it's currently due at some point in early 2016.
I'm a little bit of hype.
A little bit of hype.
Just because, I mean, like, VR technology, it seems so unattainable for so long.
Right.
You know, like, even with, like, Oculus Rift, like, I mean, you can get a developer kit or whatever, and great, you have it, but it's not, like, it's not widely obtainable to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
So for PlayStation, a company with a demonstrated record in gaming, to be putting something out like this, I mean, I'm experiencing a minimum level of hype because, one, I don't have a fucking PlayStation 4. So,
and we talk about that regret every day, right?
It's just constant regret.
Yeah, yeah.
But number two, like, I mean, that means that they must be working with developers to push out games for VR.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they're no slouches. I mean, they're good at doing that.
Right.
So I'm hoping that this will be kind of like the next stage in mm-hmm. gaming. Like, that would be fucking awesome if I could play, like, Destiny, like, first person.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. But, yeah, minimum level of hype. We'll see what the price is first. Yeah.
If it was a Microsoft VR system, would level of hype be way up there?
No, it would still be, because it's Microsoft.
Yeah.
It would be still minimum hype, but for different reasons.
Okay.
It wouldn't be.
Even when we've seen, like, how impressive the HoloLens looks?
But that's, like, that's what it will be, not necessarily what it will be at launch. That's
right,
why,
right.
You know, the minimum level of hype. But, I mean, with the Microsoft stuff, I mean, they kind of flopped with, like, Xbox One, especially at launch. I mean, there was nothing to play.
Right.
So, you know, that's why, like, it but with PlayStation, I feel like they've had this technology for so long.
Right.
Since, I think, before Oculus Rift was acquired.
I think so. Yeah. Right.
So they've been working on it for a long time.
True.
And so I'm eager to see what comes out of it.
As am I. I don't know if it's something I'm really excited to buy into. I'm excited to experience it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm excited to own it, but I would hope that the experience would be good enough to kind of push me in that direction.
Yeah.
I would think that's the goal.
I would like to see, like, have you played that game, I Am Bread?
I haven't, but I've seen a lot of things about it.
Can you imagine playing I Am Bread in VR? It's like, God damn it, move forward. God damn it, move forward. Like, I just, minimum level of hype.
Okay. UFC women's bantamweight champion Ronda Rousey is set to star in MGM's upcoming remake of the 1989 movie Roadhouse. Rousey is expected to play a female version of the Patrick Swayze role from the original film. Production on the film is slated to begin next year with the search for a writer to pen the screenplay currently underway. Plans for a remake date back as far as 2013, with XXX and the Fast and the Furious director Rob Cohen attached, though it ultimately never materialized.
She's not that good of an actor.
She's not.
I agree.
She was in Expendables 3.
And she was also in Furious 7.
True.
And
she's not a great actor.
Well, here's the good news. It's Roadhouse.
But I mean, that's a Swayze classic, though. I mean, like, you're going to fuck with that and put.
Yeah, but if she was noticeably bad in the Expendables 3,
right.
Yeah. Then it. She seems like she's not an actress. I mean, she said her lines fine, but she said them like somebody reading lines.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean,
probably shouldn't say anything bad about her because she totally kicked my ass.
No, and listen.
And, like, maybe that's what everyone's lying on. Maybe that's why she's
like, we'll
has
give you the
role.
Job. We'll give it to you. You can have it. You can have the job.
I'm her biggest fan.
Yeah.
Like, I think she's a great fighter. I think she's doing a lot for women in sports and.
For women in the geek culture.
Yeah. Like,
being
a
Pokemon
nerd,
fan, huge DBZ fan.
Right. Plays World of Warcraft. Like, insane. Like, she's doing so much for so many different communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I would gladly take a few punches to take her out to dinner and just have a night of it. Because, I mean, she looks so badass, but then when, like, she smiles, I melt a little bit inside. Aww. I'm like, oh, Rhonda. You know?
Hey, but Anna.
Help me, Ron.
I think Paul has a crush.
Little bit.
Paul got a girlfriend. Paul got a girlfriend.
He likes her.
He likes her.
He likes her.
I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Like, I mean, if she beat me up a little bit in the bedroom, I'd be okay with that.
She could play rough.
With all that being said,
yeah,
she's not a good actress.
No.
Her ability to, like, read a line,
uh-huh.
No.
No.
Not good at all. I mean, Furious 7, she was just like eyebrows arched the entire time, mm-hmm. devoid of emotion. I mean, granted, that one scene with her was just her fighting Michelle Rodriguez.
Right, right.
Whatever. But, I mean, the line reading in that was like, not convincing at all. That is Ronda Rousey, not whatever your character is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And, like, Expendables, thank God she was just fighting most of the time because the lines in that, no. I mean, and, like, what is this with, like, Hollywood remaking all of the Swayze classics? Like, now that he's gone, some copyright is, expired.
Right,
so now
right.
they can remake all these movies. Like, just remake it with somebody else.
I can't wait for Ghost.
God.
Ghost, we're back.
Ghost comes back with Mary Poppins.
Ghost 2, pottery class.
Netflix has announced that its original series, Marvel's Jessica Jones, will premiere on November 20th, 2015. The series is the second of four live-action adventures to premiere on Netflix, with Luke Cage and Iron Fist set to follow before they team up in Marvel's The Defenders. Taking place after a tragic ending to her short-lived superhero stint, the new series follows Jessica Jones as she rebuilds her personal life and career as a detective who gets pulled into cases involving people with extraordinary abilities in New York City. For those of you who have many employees that work on November 20th, 2015, prepare to shut your businesses down for the day if it's as good as Daredevil was, because people are not coming into work.
Yeah. I mean, it looks great. Like, I saw, like, the sort of teaser trailers for it.
Mm-hmm.
I like how it's very down to earth. It's not the superheroes.
Right.
It's very much like the average Joe sort of thing in this Marvel universe.
Yep.
Even though the character of Jessica Jones was, you know, kind of once a superhero.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm excited to see it. I forgot the lead actress's name, but she looks great.
That is Kristen Ritter.
Kristen Ritter. In some of the still shots, she looks great as Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And I like that they're
going to... And arguably not the person I would have thought to portray a former superhero.
Right.
But
like, not the girl from Don't Be a Bee.
Or right,
Don't
right.
Trust the Bee from 20 whatever
that show. And she was on Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, kind of not the person that you would think.
Nope.
I feel like I'm going to have an anxiety attack watching this show, though, because you know that it's leading up to The Defenders. So you're going to be, like, looking in the background of, like, every scene and or, like, everything. Every time anybody says anything, you're going to be like, oh, my God, is that relevant? Mm-hmm. Like, because you know that they do that. Like,
right.
Marvel's so good at doing that. Like, as soon as I finished watching Daredevil, I, like, looked up the lady. What was her name? The older Asian lady.
Oh, yeah.
Because she clearly has a bigger role in all of this than just she had in the Daredevil. So I'm like Googling. I'm like, who is she? Who is she connected to? What is she going to do next? Like,
I thought you were going to say Rosario Dawson, already been announced as like the Agent Coulson of the Marvel TV stuff. Like, she's a linchpin through all of these series. She'll be in all of them.
No, but like, because when she hit Daredevil, because she's like walking around with a cane. She's like this old lady. And then she like hit him and you're like, whoa. Something's going on.
Right, right.
So I'm like already just like having anxiety over like, how is this all connected? Like, I have to pay attention. Like, you really have to watch really hard. Yeah. You know, you can't just watch it. You have to like watch it.
See, I watch hard, but I don't think I'm really looking. I'm not as much looking for hints at the Defenders as I am tie-ins to the rest of the existing MCU.
Well, that's what
MCU.
I mean. Okay. Yeah. Like, just the whole thing. It's so massive that I'm like, and especially because it's less superhero stuff, I feel like I'm going to be looking harder for all the little things.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be distracted by Kung Fu.
I love just the obvious stuff where they're mentioning like Thor's hammer and the incident and things like that.
That stuff's great.
Or like you see a flash of red and blue and you're like, ooh, Spider-Man.
And I'm like, ooh, Superman. I'm like, wrong universe.
Nope.
So recently there was an article on, I believe it was on either Polygon or Kotaku that was talking about the card game that's being released for Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
There's a card game?
There's a card game that's being released that has character stats on each card.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these symbols that align these characters with whatever their
role is. Are we getting into spoiler territory?
A little bit.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you want to go there, but so a lot of some of the leaked footage, like it, I think J.J. Abrams put up like a short clip on Instagram
mm-hmm.
where we saw Finn, who's being played by John Boyega.
With a lightsaber.
With the blue lightsaber.
Right.
That is presumably Anakin's. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But in the card game on Finn's card, the only symbol that's displayed is the one for Rebel.
Okay.
The Rebel symbol. But the girl, I forget her. I don't remember her name in the movie.
Right.
Her card has two symbols, uh-huh. Rebel and Jedi.
Interesting.
And so I guess the spoiler is that Finn won't be the Jedi, but the girl will be.
I kind of figured that anyway.
And there's been a lot of like rumor, like stuff in the rumor mill lately mm-hmm. about like filming in this abandoned monastery in Ireland, and Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill's been there, and presumably he's going to be training the girl.
I assume the girl was the daughter of Han and Leia.
I thought it was going to be Finn. I thought Finn was the Jedi.
Oh.
Because of all the, I guess, the misleading media that was going into it, you know, especially
on account of the fact of him holding a lightsaber
and like igniting it like that. Like you would think he must be force sensitive.
Right. But right.
I like the idea that the girl is, because her staff is kind of reminiscent of someone from the Old Republic.
Okay.
I think her name was Grandmaster. I don't know if she became a Grandmaster, but nerdy. Grandmaster Satele Shan is, she wields a dual-ended lightsaber, and like that staff that the girl holds in the movie kind of reminds me of that staff, and it makes me excited because
sick.
It's like having like a double-ended lightsaber female wielder with
right,
force powers.
Right.
Like it reminds me of that and gets me all excited.
It's definitely something new, which is good to see.
And I mean, all the rumors that are coming out about like Anakin possibly making a return, whether that be through some sort of cloning technology or being resurrected somehow through the Force.
At this point, I paid so little attention to new Star Wars news
mm-hmm.
because distinguishing rumor from
fact
and news has become impossible.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly the way they want it.
Yeah.
They want speculation. They want everything to bleed so much together that we're watching pro wrestling and we don't know what's real and what's not anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
It does generate a little bit of excitement. I mean, the rumor of the week this week for Star Wars was that Hayden Christensen was making a return to the role.
Oh,
and everybody
God.
Was like, no,
no,
like exactly like Darth
Vader.
I will
stand up and walk out of the theater. I'm just going to like raise my middle finger to the screen and walk out.
Because in the trailer, you see somebody, presumably Kylo Ren or whoever it is, has Vader's melted mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so like,
right. That was in the trailer.
And the idea is that maybe somehow they pull like DNA from the mask, and we know that cloning technology exists mm-hmm. because of the first three movies or the first three movies, whatever. So
the movies that don't exist.
Maybe they cloned Darth Vader.
From what I've heard about Kylo Ren's character is that he is a Sith that's just obsessed with Darth Vader.
Yeah, he's a fanboy.
Right. He's a fanboy, and that's why his lightsaber is so like crappy looking.
Yeah.
And it has the like side prongs and everything, because he just constructed it from himself being like, I love Darth Vader, I'm gonna make a thing that Vader kind of had. And like he's a fanboy.
And it's even questionable as to whether or not like Kylo Ren and the House of Ren are actually Sith, mm-hmm. I think, because this is the First Order is not the Empire. It's like the remnants of the Empire mm-hmm. kind of cobbled together into this new order. And like the House of Ren, they haven't really been clear on what their role is.
Yeah.
But obviously they have Force sensitivity.
Yeah, yeah.
They're using it all the time, and they have lightsabers. So the idea is that they're Sith, but I mean, we don't know that for sure.
I kind of love that everything they told us, and it's like you just said, he's like, we know this, but kind of don't. We're not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of going back around and looping all over itself. Yeah. And yeah, like they're hiding things in plain sight, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like. JJ's so good at misdirecting,
and
except for the Into Darkness spoiler.
and they feel like, it feels like they're being so open about it, too. Like this week, they also released a 360 video of like the first trailer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you could see like the 360 models of the environments that were shot in the trailer. And it's like oh, look at all this. We're being full disclosure, guys.
Right.
Look at everything that we've done so far. Not really. Like, kind of like, here's the first game, guys. Oh, and there's also six seasons of DLC.
Yeah.
But that's coming in December.
Right.
You know, like, I got super excited when I read some of the news. So
I've stayed so far away from it because I don't want to know anything.
That's kind of where I am, too.
I don't want to know anything at all.
Yeah.
Whatsoever. I just want to go and get goosebumps.
Yeah, I want to walk in and just be like, oh, it's a movie I knew nothing about.
Yeah.
Like the fact that I know Kylo Ren's name is kind of a bummer already. I wanted to know nothing.
Yeah,
I don't. But that's kind of how I am with Batman v Superman too. Like when I saw the second trailer in the theaters, I almost wanted to cover my eyes and my ears.
I've been so screwed by it the last few years, and that's why I'm like hypersensitive to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the season 5 Walking Dead trailer. I wish I never watched it.
I was
as soon as I watched it, I'm like, fuck you guys. Like people should be caught up, but if they're not, like there was someone that we didn't know if they were dead or alive. And then they showed us the trailer and there they are. Oh, I guess they're alive.
Right.
Like totally flipping gave it away. So yeah. I'm just like, I've just been screwed over so many times that I'm just like,
Trailers are just becoming kind of garbagey.
Yeah. Like I won't watch the season 6 Walking Dead trailer. I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Not interested. I get emailed like the news and I have to like unsubscribe from it because I don't read them. I just delete them.
Right,
like, I don't want to know.
Oh, I full on, like, I buy a ticket for the hype train the minute the trailer comes out, and I am on that motherfucker until the movie comes out. Like, I am all about that. It does, I guess it doesn't, like, it sometimes it does spoil it for me, but I feel like I have enough faith in, like, J.J. Abrams and, like, Disney to make this movie that I will go into the theater and be like, wow, I did not see 95% of this.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, they're showing us such a small sliver.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, here's a small piece of the pie, guys. We'll see you in December kind of thing.
So. Yeah. I do think that probably Star Wars is doing it better than anybody else.
Like,
like Rob was saying that they're trying to confuse you on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, especially comedy trailers.
Oh, God.
Oh, here's all our best punchlines. Yep. Here you go. You're like, no, why?
The worst.
I couldn't even believe when I watched that Walking Dead trailer last year. I like actually went on Facebook and I said, piece of advice to anybody who hasn't seen it yet, don't watch it.
Yeah.
It like gave so much away. It was awful.
Our conversation right now reminded me of something that I wanted to talk to you, and I'll explain why it reminded you, even though it might seem unrelated. But Doctor Who, you had said in the past that you wish you didn't know when they were regenerating or when a certain companion was leaving and coming in and stuff. And there has been news about a companion leaving, which you probably already heard.
Yeah.
Jenna Coleman is leaving the show. I don't know if it's at the end of the series or when it is, but she's definitely leaving, which I know you're probably happy about because you're not a huge fan of Clara anyway. But did you see the first episode of You Have Not?
Mm-mm.
Never mind. Because I will say this about it without giving anything away. That I probably enjoyed it more than any of the stuff they did last season.
Okay.
Already.
Okay.
It is the first of a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a to be continued. But I feel like this episode is where we saw Capaldi really become the Doctor.
Okay.
Up to this point, he felt like someone cast in the role of the Doctor for me.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like he's the Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know tonight's episode, of course, it'll be 2 nights old by the time people are listening, or like a week and 2 nights old by the time people are listening. Timey-wimey. But yeah, tonight's episode is supposed to be on Skaro with Davros and the Daleks. So I really want to watch it.
Yeah.
But I've kind of been slow on the Doctor Who train for
a we lot can of watch reasons. Episode one tonight.
I don't know. I've been so disappointed by Doctor Who for a while. So I just kind of feel like they just need to fire Stephen Moffat. That's all.
Yeah.
They just need to get somebody else in there.
Time for somebody new.
Well, I'm watching my old Doctor Who, so I'm like super happy.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm watching my first Doctor. So I'm like, yay, it's okay. Everything's fine. Everything's okay.
I'm curious.
I can pretend.
I love the Tennant run so much that I almost want to go back and watch some of that and just see how it feels.
Oh, man.
Compared to what I'm watching now.
Yeah, on my classic Doctor Who DVDs, they have trailers for the new series, and they had an Eccleston trailer, and I'm like, oh, dude, like, he was so good.
That stuff was so good.
I'm like, oh, remember.
Pilot excluded. Yeah. Everything else was great.
Yep, so good.
Yeah. I do have a couple more things we could talk about. First of all, Deadline brings word that 20th Century Fox is developing a modern take on the classic TV series, The A-Team. Fast and Furious producer Chris Morgan will executive produce the A-Team remake series with Tania McKiernan, the daughter of original series creator Stephen Cannell. Albert Kim will script the latest adaptation of the material. The outlet reports that, like the original series, the new show will focus on a team of special forces operatives framed for a crime they didn't commit and intent on bringing down the Black Ops organization that set them up. In between clearing their name, however, the team will help others along the way. Unlike the original cast, the new series will include both male and female members among its ranks.
Oh, you mean they're going to mix it up instead of just having four women?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm minimal level of hype.
Yeah.
Because I loved A-Team, and I think it's possible to redo it.
I liked the movie, the remake of it.
It was good. I like Bradley Cooper's face. That was good.
I almost want them to just make it call it the A-Team. Maybe have I want it to be like a sequel of sorts.
Mm.
Have the original A-Team be something of legend.
Yeah.
That inspires this new team to do something similar.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't want them to walk all over what came before. Not that, I mean, it's not the most precious thing in the world. It's the A-Team.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to see a little bit of respect shown to the original.
Like, have a guy who is presumably to become the next new leader be like, I remember these stories that my commander used to tell me about these guys.
How cool would it be if one of those, that guy that you're referring to right now, was someone that was saved by the original A-Team in their initial exploits, like maybe a kid of somebody.
Right. And he comes up, he goes through the military, goes through special ops.
Inspired by.
And then he sees all this wrong that's going on. And then he remembers that when the one day that he was saved and like, And we're writing the new A-Team, guys.
Hollywood, we're right here.
We are writing the new A-Team.
Right here.
I mean, it's definitely possible. Like, I mean, I would love to see a female face. Like, that would be awesome.
Yep.
And actually, speaking of Ronda Rousey, she could be a female BA, because BA was just like corny one-liners all the time.
Sure.
And then just beating the shit out of people.
Yeah.
You're utilizing her talents to the fullest of their abilities.
While we are being all about like gender equality and stuff, there is a problem with this premise of having women on the show.
Do tell.
Because I was speaking with my former military friend, not former friend that was in the military for a long time, and he educated me on the concept. Neither of us had any problem with them including females in the show for the sake of including females in the show. Mm-hmm. Problem is, horribly inaccurate, because apparently at this point, women are not allowed to be in special forces.
Yeah. There's, I think, the Army only recently admitted two women into their Ranger program. Mm-hmm. That was like national news.
Right.
And so,
So while they're trying to make everything nice and equal in Hollywood, they're also breaking possibility.
But I mean, they also, I mean,
granted, they build tanks that fall out of planes, but you know, let's.
Right.
It could also take place in the near future.
True. It very well could.
Yeah.
Which would solve the problem.
Right.
Like, future A-Team might actually be nice, too, because it's like you might be fighting the bad guys, but you might also be fighting technology somehow, you know, like bring it up to the 21st century sort of thing. I'm on. I'll buy a ticket for this hype train.
Yeah.
But as long as they don't abuse the one-liners from the original series, like if they get the original guy, the original Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is he still alive?
No, he's not.
Okay. But if you get like Liam Neeson to come on the show and be like, I love it when a plant comes. Yeah, that'd be awesome. But don't
patronize us.
Don't recycle it into the new show.
Right.
Like, you know?
Right. I agree. One last thing we can talk about. Anna, this is probably something that you may have heard about, but I don't know. While on the promotional trail for his much-praised new sci-fi film, The Martian, Ridley Scott has previously revealed that he is planning on making three more sequels to his 2012 alien pseudo-prequel Prometheus, and now in an interview with another outlet, he has let it slip that he plans to call the first sequel Alien Paradise Lost.
Right.
Yeah.
But then he also backtracked, like he announced that the sequel is going to be Alien Paradise Lost, but then he said, oh, this is not going to be an Alien movie. The true sequel or the true connection to Alien or the true sequel is going to come like three movies down the line or something like that. Like, why would you walk forward into that territory and then back tread? Like, it makes no sense. I don't understand. Like, they said that this new movie, Alien Paradise Lost, is going to follow the Doctor and Michael Fassbender's android on their misadventure into whatever to find the creators. And it's not going to have anything to do with Alien. And that the closest thing to Alien is going to be three movies down the line. But why call it Alien Paradise Lost? Like,
yeah, if you're, that's weird. If you're going to use the name,
why not?
You're in.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand the connection.
To sell tickets? To have people go, I'm going to buy this, and then sit there and go, wait a minute.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what they did with Prometheus, right?
I liked Prometheus.
I thought it was good.
I really liked it.
I didn't see it.
So I liked it a lot.
I walked out with more questions than answers, but I mean, I liked the movie because I knew that they were going somewhere else with it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I don't understand why you would call it Alien Paradise Lost and then have it not have anything to do with like the xenomorphs from the Alien universe. Mm. Like, I mean, I get that the creators are a thing and that they need to explore that a little more, but I don't know why you would leak it and then walk back on it. I don't know. It makes no sense to me.
Well, he also kind of did it with Prometheus, too, because he had said that Prometheus was not an alien thing and then blatantly tied it in and then said, OK, it's an alien thing. And then he's doing it all over again. Yeah. I just think he can't make up his mind on anything anymore.
Well, I think I read something on one of the outlets that said that Prometheus 2 is holding up the series or the Alien series that they're planning on doing. And so they want Prometheus 2 to just hurry the fuck up.
Right, because Neil Blomkamp's supposed to be working on an Alien movie.
Alien 5. So, and because the storyboards and like the concept art for Alien 5 is already online, they kind of want they want to hurry it up so that they can get Alien 5 made.
Right.
But then you have Ridley Scott going to the media and saying, no, that's not an Alien sequel. I'm making the Alien sequel three movies from now.
Right.
Like, get your stories straight. Like, I mean, if everybody's making something, I mean, who's making it, guys?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I don't really understand the licensing, why he's making an Alien movie. And like, I'm confused about that.
Well, I think the studio still holds the license, but Ridley Scott is a producer on everything. So literally everything, Prometheus and the Alien series, he's a producer on all of it. So I think he wants to get Prometheus out first because he's the director and producer on Prometheus. And he wants to get that story out of the way before Alien comes out so that it makes more sense. But he's holding up the production line. So
right, right.
I consume that stuff like crazy. I'm like, you can throw it all at me. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm just going to absorb it and I'll figure it out. I don't care. Give it to me, though. Give me.
All the aliens.
Give me all the aliens.
Throw a face hugger right at me and let it attach and
Oh, my God. There was this hat online I saw. It was so cool.
Yep.
It was like a ski mask, but it was a face hugger.
Really?
So you could put a face hugger on your own face.
Oh, no.
Did you ever get that like anxiety about Alien? Like, I remember after seeing Alien when I was a kid, I just like every time I lied down, like I just felt this itch like in my chest, like, you know, right where the chest burster comes out, and you're just like, God damn it. I shouldn't have watched that fucking movie.
I gotta say no. I never felt that anxiety.
Oh my God, I got it like all the time.
Yeah.
Just like super anxiety, just like, ugh. Did something hug my face in the middle of the night? I don't know.
The thing that scared me the most about Alien the first time I saw it as a kid was Ash. Ash scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Alien nothing. That android scared the piss out of me.
Really?
Oh my God. The way he was like trying to kill her. Oh my God. So scary.
We had very different experiences because the thing that scared me was the fucking thing coming out of the guy's chest. Like that was so intense.
Mix them together and it gets far worse.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up right there. Final thoughts or something you would like to plug, Anna?
Just stubbed my toe on your coffee table.
Yeah, I heard that. That was loud. The audience might have heard that one.
Ouch. No.
No. Follow.
Donate to the Geek Generation so we can pay to fix Anna's toe.
Hey, any reason to get money. Thanks for taking one for us, Anna. That was well done. to see everything else that we do, head on over to thegeekgeneration.com. If you use iTunes, please rate the show and write a review. We always appreciate those. You can like us at facebook.com/thegeekgeneration and follow @geekgeneration on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @thenightangel. Support the show by going to thegeekgeneration.com/support. You can send emails to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can also be found on our site. We're done for this week, but we'll be back soon with more stuff for you. And we'll see you then. Later.
Make it so.